morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to the TT Podcast. Remco Evenepoel is the new King of Spain, our first Belgian Grand Tour winner for 44 years, and it never really looked in doubt. Joining me to discuss exactly how Remco won the Vuelta is my co-host Tom. Tom, how are you?
Hi, everyone. I'm going to get it out there immediately. I'm not very well. If you hear me coughing throughout all of this, we've had to push this recording back a few days, haven't we? Because I was really bad earlier in the week. And hopefully we're going to get through it today and I'll be okay, but can't promise anything.
Oh, you poor thing. Well, you said you've been out on a run before this. How did the run go? Did you feel a bit down in the dumps?
No, I felt awful. I've had three or four really bad runs.
And the recovery mango didn't do you any good?
I'm halfway through my mango. There might be a recovery beer on the cards later, so hopefully that does a bit more. It is a Friday.
Yeah, that'll make you feel better.
Yeah, I'm sure it will, or at least numb the pain.
That's good. I'm sorry to hear you were feeling ill, Tom. In what form did your illness take? Not to dive too much into your sickness.
It's not COVID. I've done a couple of tests that I had left over, and so I'm pretty sure it's not COVID. It's just something with exactly the same symptoms.
Do you know what? You saying that reminded me of when you did have COVID and we broke the news on the TT podcast.
We did. That was 2 years ago.
It was. But you had it before it was kind of commonplace. I remember you telling me how someone turned up to your house in a hazmat suit to like test you.
Oh yeah, I was a trendsetter. Anyway, that's not the case this time.
Okay.
Well, it better not be, because I've been into the office for the last 2 days anyway, so not good news if it is.
Are you feeling well enough to talk about the Vuelta?
As well as I ever am. Look, would I rather be talking about another race? Possibly. You know how I feel about the Vuelta, but that's what we've got. So let's go.
So the issue, Tom, is I know every episode, really, it's my job to defend the Vuelta because I'm a big fan of it. But this year, I feel quite
It's not given you much to work with, has it?
It's not. There was just no real race.
Not since we last spoke. Not much has really changed.
No, I mean, the thing is, when you look across the three jerseys, right? Three jerseys? How many jerseys are there? The three main jerseys. Mm-hmm. The mountains, the points, and the GC. Remco had the GC sewn up after the time trial. Mads Pedersen had the points jersey sewn up. And Jay Vine was basically on form for the mountains classification. And then he crashed out and Carapaz just flew away. So like, in terms of the race being taken to all three of those classifications, there was no real competition.
No, everyone seemed... All the standings seemed to set themselves in that first week when we last recorded an episode. And everyone seemed to be quite happy with the position they were in there. And bar a few crashes, obviously there were a couple of, as you said, major withdrawals from the race. But even so, they certainly didn't affect the leaders in any of the jersey. And everyone just got themselves into a position that they probably, where they thought they'd be at the start of the race, and stayed there.
So with the Vuelta, this is what I didn't understand. Usually it's seen as like a race where people can get redemption for their season. And it's all a bit crazy sometimes because it's more people trying to, like, as I say, like save their season sort of thing. Like, they didn't manage to do it at the other races that they cared about. And they come to the Vuelta and they ride like a head case. Now, the issue with this edition was Remco had basically trained the whole season to peak in his form in this last kind of quarter of the year. The last quarter of the season anyway. So he hasn't really raced that much up until now. He won, Liège and San Sebastian. So he's done all right, actually. But because of that, it was kind of like, right, well, it's almost not in the spirit of the Vuelta, if you know what I mean. To train specifically for the Vuelta is not in the spirit of the Vuelta.
Yeah, very inconsiderate of him. You should only be allowed to enter the Vuelta, is what you're saying, if you've had an injury or some sort of terrible misfortune that's derailed the actual plan for your season.
Exactly. If you can only enter the Vuelta if you've crashed out of either the Giro or the Tour, basically. it's against the culture, which is what, you know.
Yeah, fine. If you want to go with that, we'll go with that. I'm not sure I can agree. I think the last few years, definitely. But I think we have been spoiled for that in the last couple of years, obviously, because however many in a row, Roglic has targeted the Tour, not won the Tour, crashed out the Tour, and gone and taken the Vuelta as his consolation prize.
We can talk about Roglic crashing out in a minute. Should we talk about Remco first?
I suppose. He did win the race.
First Belgian Grand Tour winner for 44 years. That's quite... I mean, when I heard that stat, I was shocked at it. But let's unpack that a little bit. But what do you think about, you know, 44 years with no... I mean, considering how Belgium are like the cycling nation...
they are the cycling nation, but they're, it's not a Grand Tour nation, is it? Where are their mountains? Like, Belgium produces classics riders, and that's the kind of riding they love. So I can sort of see, yes, it's a surprise that you'd go 44 years without having this great Belgian Grand Tour winner. But it doesn't surprise me when your Grand Tour winners tend to come from Spain. I want to say France, but they actually haven't had them for ages either, have they? Italy, obviously, I mean, Britain has obviously had a few, Slovenia apparently now as well. But to me, the style of riding I associate with Belgians has never really been three-week Grand Tours. It's always been my kind of racing, one day, punchy, exciting, you know, the classics, Flanders.
So I thought you were going to list a few more classics then.
I was, but no, well, I can, but there are more in Belgium, Liège-Bastogne-Liège.
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, I think you've hit into it. I think that's what it was. I mean, Quick Step, this is their first ever win in a Grand Tour. I mean, they've been around for almost two decades.
They win everything.
They win all the, I mean, they've always targeted the classics. And I'll tell you what, I think when they signed Remco back in 2018, they were basically signing him as a classics rider. I mean, at the time, he was like a really, really strong time trialist. I think he'd like obliterated the junior worlds or something, or definitely some sort of like junior big competition. And I didn't think he was being brought into the team to lead like GC campaigns. I think he has really, you know, forced that career for himself.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's hard to tell when he was as young as he was when they signed, you know, he was so raw that his career could have gone in any direction and still can, to be honest. He's still that young. But when you've got that level of talent, it does seem to be that, yeah, he can turn himself to anything.
It surprised me as well when I look back at Quick Step's kind of like performance and Grand Tours and what they've targeted. Generally, it seems to be like the points jersey. So you've had Cavendish, Jakobsen winning at the Tour, Viviani at the Giro a few years back. The closest they've got up until now to winning a Grand Tour was 2019 Tour de France. What happened to that race, Tom?
2019 Tour de France, Quick Step. So it was won by, what year are we in now?
22.
So who won in 2019? Hang on. That would have been when Egan Bernal won.
Yeah, and who led the GC for the best part of 2 weeks that race?
Julien Alaphilippe. Yeah.
There's a whole other episode here as to why I think Alaphilippe would have won that race had that stage not been...
He was going backwards.
It was called off for adverse. You know what? He was descending like he was on rails that year.
And he wouldn't have done it.
He would have done, I think there was a stage before where he was dropped and he lost like 30 seconds on the mountain, and descended and caught them back up and then overtook them on the descent.
If you haven't got the legs on the up, though, he's never going to maintain it.
I'll be honest. All I'm going to say on that for the moment is I was very surprised the French competition stopped the clocks at the top of the hill rather than letting Alaphilippe go down a little bit.
We've all seen that avalanche across the road.
And I think Alaphilippe was the man to navigate it.
No.
Let's talk, Tom, about points jerseys, because I think there were two riders for me, apart from Remco. There were two riders for me that really stood out at this Vuelta a España. Richard Carapaz and Mads Pedersen. Now, you've told me you want to speak a little bit about Mads Pedersen.
Well, Carapaz as well. They both won three stages in the end, haven't they? Which is incredibly... I think that was another thing with this Vuelta. There was two or three riders who won multiple stages, and there's really not that much to take away from it.
So this is back to my point, Tom. Sorry to interrupt you. Richard Carapaz, the prime candidate for a good Vuelta performance, went for the Giro, got pipped to it by Jai Hindley, salvages his season with three Vuelta stages.
Stage wins, yeah.
There you go. That's how it works. That is the spirit of the Vuelta.
Pedersen, though, has just... I think he's found his niche, hasn't he? He's in a reduced group.
To go to stages where sprinters aren't.
Make sure Fred White's leading it out for him as well.
Yeah.
And but... Yeah, he's. It's almost like watching, I want to say Sagan in his prime, but not really, because Sagan did have that speed on the flat, could go for it as well. But on a lumpy stage, if there's a, you know, anything like a sort of technical finish or a slightly uphill finish, or it gets a bit punchy, and there's a reduced bunch that gets to the line, Pedersen wins.
Pedersen's one of those where people always say that he won the world championships maybe a little bit too early in his career. And
is
I say that, I mean,
is that a thing?
Yeah, I guess so. Why not? I was really hoping you wouldn't question that.
Yeah.
The fact that he won the world championships in 2019, got to wear his jersey for all of about 3 months before the whole season got locked down in 2020. He's only now, you know, really repping those rainbow bands that he has on his jersey. I guess he did a bit last season. Did he win Gent Wevelgem last season or the season before? He's been doing quite well. You know what? Pedersen's a good rider, and that's not, you know, a revolutionary thing to say. Albeit at the expense of Fred Wright.
Yeah, which is a shame. I mean, as we've said this plenty of times, it'll come for Fred. He's clearly got the talent, but yeah, maybe just a bit of experience, a bit more tactical nous.
Do you want to know my hot tip, Tom?
Yes.
Hot tip, is that the phrase? That's the phrase, isn't it?
No, it's hot take.
Hot take. I thought hot tip sounded wrong. Do you want to know my hot take, Tom?
I'd love to.
Fred Wright's going to win the world championships.
That's a very hot take.
Think, right, the road race course, about 260 kilometers long.
Yeah, lumpy.
Lumpy, similar to Flanders. Was it Flanders? Yeah, it was Flanders he did really well in this year, wasn't it?
Yes.
We'll see. I mean, I don't know how tired he is after basically trying to win every single stage at two Grand Tours.
Yeah, well, he's not going to have you there screaming at him like he did at the Altiport as well, is he?
He could do it. If he fancies flying me across the Wollongong, I'm more than glad to do that role for him.
Well, there's been a few complaints about that, isn't there? As long as you're not flying business class with Emirates, you'll be all right.
Yeah, well, should we talk about Fred making headlines recently?
You know, I was wondering what you're getting at there. I've just realised, yes, this was, I assume, one of those high-profile withdrawals from the Vuelta that I alluded to about 5 minutes ago.
Yes, let's get into it, Tom.
Do you want to
try and tell the story from start to finish?
I'm not sure I can go into that much detail.
Start with the stage. Which stage? I can't remember which stage it was. Sometime later in the Vuelta,
yeah.
Roglic attacks off the front with, like, whatever it is, 5Ks to go.
But I've seen so many conflicting stories about it as well. When it first happened, essentially, you know, the core of it is Roglic came off his bike, went down in the final leading to the finish line, has blamed Fred for it the following day. Well, not even him.
It was like 2 days later or something, wasn't it?
Just a bizarre turn of events. No one really thought anything of it. You know, racing incident. I saw things on Twitter saying there was like a plastic bag on the road that they were saying that Roglic could have gone over or something. And I thought, okay, you know, it's just one of those things. And then, yeah, days later, there's this bizarre statement from Jumbo Visma saying it's all Fred's fault.
I think, right, we trace it back to the start and you say...
It was stage 16.
Was that what it was? First of all, what is Roglic... I mean, he'd already put a massive time gap in to Remco. Later, we'd find out that Remco was saved by the puncture rule within the 3 kilometer, whatever, whether you believe in that or not. But he'd already put massive time into him. And then for some reason, he decided he was going to sprint for the win, I guess for more bonus seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But to get kind of tangled up in that chaotic finish was a very, very high risk move anyway. You could see he was knackered because his sprint line was all over the place. The issue for him, it's kind of like VAR, where, you know, on VAR, when they put the fake lines on the pitch and you're like, okay, well, I can see why he's offside.
Yeah.
There were like white lines down the middle of the road. So you could almost see Roglic kind of like swing over to the right to where Fred Wright was. That's what the cameras told. Roglic's side of the story is that Wright came up from behind him, took his
hand. Well, that's what I've got the quotes here.
Oh, go on, read them out. Do you want to, I was going to say do an accent, but maybe we shouldn't do accents because that sounds a bit...
What is a Slovenian accent? I don't even really know. So.
But Roglic picks a lot of like, huh, at the end of him, doesn't he? But like, yeah, it was a hard, tough day, huh?
Okay.
That was quite good, actually.
Imagine, if you can, that Primoz Roglic was in fact born in Kent, and this is what he would sound like. My conclusion is that the way this crash happened is unacceptable. Not everyone saw it correctly. The crash was not caused by a bad road or a lack of safety, but by a rider's behavior. I don't have eyes on my back, otherwise I would have run wide. Wright came from behind and rode the handlebars out of my hands before I knew it.
It's a bit like Wagatha Christie. Remember the Wagatha Christie thing with Colleen Rooney and Rebecca Vardy?
It was like... Rebecca Vardy's account.
Yeah, it was Fred Wright's account.
Yeah.
Absurd. The most absurd bit about that press release, if you've got it up in front of you, was what Richard Pluger said. Is it Richard Pluger? That's his name.
I have not got that bit there yet.
Hang on. Well, he said something afterwards and he was just like,
yes, I have got it.
It was along the lines of junior riders need to basically buck up their ideas and not ride so dangerously.
Yeah, but then Fred came out. Fred was still in the race at this point, so he crossed the line to see that this statement had been released on the following day's stage.
Yeah.
And was just there going like, what?
It's a ridiculous move, and it doesn't really sound like Roglic, and I'm not going to pretend I know Roglic closely.
Well, that was it. It was released through the team rather than by the rider individually, wasn't it?
Yeah. It doesn't seem to be in Roglic's nature to push young riders into the firing line.
Yeah.
I have not seen anything, and albeit my Twitter feed and everything is very Anglo-centric, but I have not seen anything defending Roglic's point of view here.
Honestly, I just
seen anybody come out and say, you know, Fred Wright was in the wrong.
But that's the thing, like, no one was blaming Roglic either at the end of the day. It was just went down as a sort of racing incident. And yeah, when was Roglic's fault. But everyone just sort of wrote it off and went, look, bit of bad luck, draw a line under it. And then the next day, just everyone's going, why are you saying this?
I think, has Roglic ended a season there? Or maybe he's going to come back for Lombardia or something. He's
actually
not doing the Worlds.
I actually don't know the extent of his injuries from that crash.
He's not doing the Worlds. I think he's quite lucky that he's not now got to go into a big peloton of a lot of riders after he just tried to throw one of them under the bus for no real reason.
Yeah, I mean, even if that was the case, it's still a pretty poor thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah. Tom, I've got a quiz for you.
Ooh.
You didn't know a quiz was coming this week.
No, I've not been warned about this one.
I know that you haven't been watching the Vuelta too intently.
Great.
So we'll see how well you do on this.
Mm-hmm.
There are 4 questions.
Yeah.
None of them super specific to like the minutiae that happened in the stages.
Okay.
Question 1.
Let's go.
How many times has Enric Mas finished second at the Vuelta?
Even if I had watched it, I wouldn't know this. 4.
No.
Oh, second, do you mean second and stages at this year's Vuelta or at the
second
race?
Second overall, in the overall classification.
Oh, right. Okay. Twice.
3 times.
Oh.
And you know what, with Enric Mas, I think he's probably one of the best Grand Tour riders of the last 10 years to never win a Grand Tour.
How old is he? Because I've always, he's one of them who I still think is like 24, and in fact, he'll be 32. And
shall I look up? You know what? I'll look up how old he is for you, Tom.
He's
27.
He's still quite young. Yeah. Yeah. Very young in that case.
The issue for him is he is on a team that panders to the ego of a convicted doper. And that's all we'll say on that, as we always do.
Question two.
who is the only rider this season to win a stage at 2 different Grand Tours?
Pedersen.
Well done.
Yes.
Mads Pedersen.
There we go.
A couple, aren't there?
I did know that one. That was good. I remember him winning at the Tour.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Okay, right. Question 3. Similar vein sort of question. One rider this season has entered the club of riders who have won stages at all 3 Grand Tours. So that's the Giro, the Tour, and the Vuelta.
Yeah.
Who was it?
He
took the stage at the Vuelta. That's why this is a Vuelta question.
Giro, Vuelta. Well, I don't know why I'm listing the 3 Grand Tours. Obviously, I know. I've got one name in my head here.
Go on.
But I feel like he... I don't remember him winning at the Vuelta before. I know he's won at the Giro and the Tour.
That, you know what? That sounds like a good line of thinking then.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Rigoberto Urán.
That's correct.
Yes.
It was Rigo. He's the first rider this season to enter that club.
I'm sure you and I had a conversation about... there was someone's palmarès we were discussing recently.
There's over like 100... I think it was Dan Martin's palmarès we were talking about, maybe.
It probably was Dan Martin, actually, yeah.
There's over 100 riders in that club, and Rigoberto Urán is now one of them.
That's a lovely insight into the relationship we have outside of this podcast. Just spend our spare time discussing Dan Martin's palmarès.
There you go. 4th and final question.
Sorry, I did cut you off there as well. Over 100 in that club now.
I think so.
That's more than I would have thought.
It might not be over 100. I think it is over 100.
Well, it's either over or under. It could be exactly 100, but...
I don't know. So if somebody could check that and get back to us, that would be very kind.
Yeah, we'll move on to question four.
Because in the meantime, we've got to get on to question four. Tom, this is an age-old TT podcast question. And you'd be... And close your browsers now in case you have it up in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what the question's going
to
be?
I'll go back to reading previews of the world so I can pick my winners for the race while we record.
Do you know what the question's going to be? It's not who am I. It's...
No, go on. Just let me have it.
Tom, as you're aware, everybody always forgets who came third on GC.
Who came third?
Who came third on GC at the Vuelta?
Spanish.
I'm going to need more than that. You can't just say Spanish.
He is Spanish. I remember seeing the Spanish flag, I'm sure. Is he Spanish?
He is Spanish.
I can't remember his name. I really can't. Jose.
Are you going to guess a Spanish name, are you?
Yeah. It's not Jose, then.
It's Juan.
Juan. That was close with Jose. Gonzalez.
And who does Juan Gonzalez ride for?
I don't know.
It was Juan Ayuso.
Oh, yeah, I know it. I did have the browser open and I had looked at it 45 minutes ago as well.
Bit of trivia about Juan Ayuso, Tom, if you want it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how old Juan Ayuso is?
Let me just open my other tap if you give me about 20 seconds.
I can tell you, this isn't a question. He is 19 years old. And
I've got some bad news for you.
Is he 20?
It's his birthday today.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it actually?
Yeah, 16th of September 2002.
Okay, well, this is still relevant to last week. Well, happy birthday, Juan Ayuso, in that case. He was the first, I don't know why I found that so funny, first teenager to finish on a Grand Tour podium since Henri Cornet won the Tour de France in 1904.
I was going to say, it's going to be that far back, isn't it?
1904. Over 100 years, if you can't do the maths.
Well over 100 years.
Yeah. I've got a bonus question for you, Tom, if you want it.
Oh, go on then.
On the same vein as the last question, who came third? Who came third at the Giro and who came third at the Tour?
I can't remember the Giro at all. Who won the Giro? Tour.
Jai Hindley won the Giro.
Tour. Jonas Vingegaard. Tadej Pogacar. Third was...
It's true. Nobody ever remembers who came third. There's part of me that thinks people are going to be listening to this and shouting the person that came third. But then there's also part of me that knows that everyone always forgets who comes third. So they're all going, scratching their heads.
Third at the Tour. I'm going to need a clue.
He's won the Tour before.
Ah, yeah, I was talking about this. I still can't remember who it is, but I remember saying it was Geraint Thomas.
It was Geraint Thomas.
Should have remembered that, but... yeah, I remember saying after the Tour, like, I put a tweet out saying, is that the first time there's been three winners on the podium at the same time?
Yeah.
And it wasn't.
Okay, was it not?
No. I can't remember when it last happened either.
So I knew that one, not to brag. Mm-hmm. Giro, when I looked this up, I had not a clue it was this guy. So that's not going to put you in good stead.
No. Can I have a nationality?
Spanish.
That doesn't help. I assume it's not he who must not be named.
Obviously not.
So it is Marc Soler.
Mikel Landa.
Yeah. Wouldn't have. No, don't remember that happening at all.
Yeah, quite a forgettable podium, that one, to be honest. No disrespect to the Giro.
Right, shall we move on to the Worlds?
Let's move on to the Worlds, Tom. I asked you to give me predictions for the individual time trial. Before we go on to our predictions, I'm going to go through slightly the course of the individual time trial. It is a 34.2 kilometer course starting at the beachfront in Wollongong. It then twists and turns through the city center, accumulating a total elevation gain of 312 meters before arriving at the finish line, which I think is back at the beachfront.
It is. Is it not like a, is it a lap?
I think they do two laps and there's a little hill that they go up in it.
The only thing I can really remember from my research is that men and women for the first time are doing exactly the same course.
Exactly. That's very true. And on that note, Tom, I'm going to ask you first for your winner off the women's individual time trial.
I have given this some thought. It's, I was hoping you'd give me the men first, I'll be honest.
But, okay, well, we'll start with the men. Go on, give me your men's one first.
Well, see, no, I don't know which way around I want this, because the men I've got, I think there are quite a few candidates.
I think there are two candidates for the men.
Who's your second one? Obviously, the first one for the men is obvious.
The Irishman, Philip Ogana.
Yes, exactly. So I'd like to know who you've got second.
Remco Evenepoel.
No. See, I've
just won the Vuelta.
Exactly. And that is why he will not have the legs to compete at the Worlds.
Okay. Right. Who else have you got as contenders?
There's a few down there. Obviously, Wout van Aert is the big absence.
Yeah.
So the next two on my list were...
I'll be honest, Tom. I actually think that's probably his best chance at a rainbow jersey as well. But he's not bothered about the time trial one.
No. So I think the next two on my list were probably Kung and Bissiger.
Two almost guys.
I said it's a bit hilly. It's a bit technical. You never know. Ganna wants 50k flat where he can just put the power down.
Yeah.
And obviously, I don't know what the weather's supposed to be like. You can't account for that because that seems to be partly that and partly maybe a bit of a puncture in Copenhagen that cost him the yellow jersey at the Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, there's a set of circumstances where Ganna doesn't win. But yeah, he was the first name on my list as well.
So you're going for Ganna?
Yep.
I'm going to go for Remco.
Just won't happen.
Okay.
He's too tired. He's too young. He hasn't got the legs to do three weeks.
Equally, I don't know where Ganna is at the moment because it was revealed today that he's going to be doing attempting the hour record in about 3 weeks' time.
That suggests he's on quite good form.
Well, I don't know. But what's he training for? Are you training for the time trial? Are you training for the hour record?
Are they not essentially the same thing?
No, they're not, Tom. The hour record is all about... I mean, I guess they're both about positioning, but the hour record is a lot more like, you know, pure power and like pure aero, whereas the time trial... And it's quite... I mean, there's a lot of corners in this time trial, so it's going to have to be, you know...
I still think Remco...
On the skis a little bit.
Even at the end of the Vuelta, he was getting dropped. He had enough time in the bank and it was never really under threat, was it? But he was cracking. He's showing signs of weakness. So not sure this is the one for him now.
Okay, right. Fair enough. Let's go on to the women.
So, you know what? I've completely forgotten who I picked for the women. Again, I did this an hour ago. There are some very obvious choices. Most of them Dutch, which is an issue. Why are you smiling at me like that? Why is that an issue? Because every time we talk about women's cycling, we just reel off a list of Dutch cyclists and go, you know what, one of them might win.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I'm not going for a Dutch person.
Oh, perfect. Right, Ellen van Dijk.
You're going Ellen van Dijk?
Yeah.
Okay, interesting. Ellen van Dijk is very good at time trialing, so that's a wise choice.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to go for Annemiek van Vleuten, and I was going to explain to you why van Vleuten's not going to win it.
I thought I was, but I got mixed up in the build-up to this, to be honest, and I thought you'd also ask me for my picks for the road race. So when we do that, we might come back to Annemiek van Vleuten in the next episode.
Okay. Annemiek van Vleuten has only raced 4.7 kilometers of individual time trials this year.
Mm-hmm.
Bear in mind, actually, this is a fun stat for you.
Did she win those 4.7 kilometers?
She did not.
Oh.
Bear in mind, on the Women's World Tour this year, there was a total... cumulative kilometer number off time trialing off 22 point something kilometers. I realize that stat could be a bit more refined now. And this race is 34. So they're doing more kilometers in this single world championships than the entirety of the women's world
tour the year.
This season. Van Dijk's won a couple of pro series races in the time trials this year. But I, Tom, am going for Marlon Rosa.
I think that's a bit out of left field.
I don't think so. She won the European Championships last month. She's come second at the Worlds the last 2 years. And also she's looking in supreme form. Like the Tour de France Femme, there was a stage that she won where she just powered away from the rest of the field.
I have got that up now.
I think this is her year.
If you give me 5 seconds, I will be able to tell you that it was stage 4.
Was it?
Yep.
Was that the gravel one? Where was it to?
It was to Bar-sur-Aube.
I don't think that was the gravel one.
Bar-sur-Aube. A-U-B-E. That is difficult Aube. To pronounce. Aube. Yeah.
Aube.
From Troyes.
Troyes.
Yeah.
That's another... Aube. Yeah,
another horrible. You get anywhere around there, sort of Champagne region, because the stage 3, I'm already looking at Reims on my screen there. So.
It's Reims.
Reims, yeah.
I think we've done this whole bit before, Tom, about how difficult those stages were to pronounce.
Probably, unfortunately, a lot of the cycling is based in France, and a lot of French places have stupid names.
So there we go, Tom. You have very astutely picked the two reigning world champions to win the time trial. So quite the researcher you are.
You know what? I didn't research enough to remember that they are the two reigning world champions.
Not only did you go for them, you didn't even realize in your research they were the two reigning world champions.
Sometimes you've just got to go with the form book, haven't you?
Yeah. Tom, I never asked you to do this, but I'm going to ask you to rate the Vuelta out of 10.
Before I do that, I just want to point out, I don't think we've talked about a time trial once this year, and I have not backed Ganna to win it.
Wow, the guy that follows the form books. Very wise.
Yeah. The Vuelta out of 10, I'm going to give it a 6.
I was going to say like a 3.
Oh, okay. You have been very harsh then.
Maybe more.
I'd already forgotten that it started in Utrecht.
Oh, yeah, as had I. That's news to me, actually.
It was, yeah, like just almost completely unremarkable.
Well, let's hope that...
That's a bit harsh.
Quite cutting, actually. Anyway, Tom, despite our opinions on this year's Vuelta, it has been a pleasure speaking to you about it. The listener, thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you next time, where I assume, Tom, we'll be speaking about the World Championships road race.
I believe that's the plan. I will go and research now who the two reigning world champions are, and I look forward to getting my picks in.
Where can people hear whatever reactions we have to this year's World Championships?
As ever, they can find us at TTPD. I've forgotten how to spell it. TTPDCST on Twitter and Insta.
Fluid as ever.
That's the first time I've actually forgotten.
Okay. Well, great. Head there if you like. If not, we'll be back with you next week.
Thanks very much.